Cue the fancy intro music. This is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom gives you the tips, tools, and resources you need to define and achieve success on your own terms, so you can make great money doing what you love and have the time and freedom to enjoy it. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Lisa Robin Young. Let's get started. In my decades in the online world, I call myself an internet dinosaur from time to time. In all those years, I've seen thousands, if not tens of thousands of programs that promise you some kind of infinite success if you just zero in on your target audience. There are lots of ways to do this, of course, from client avatars to psychographics and demographics if you come from a traditional marketing background. I've talked in previous seasons about how to know whether or not you need a customer avatar in the first place, or taking a worldview approach might be better suited to your business. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the episode from a time before the podcast, so you'll be getting me in all that audio visual glory. Oh yeah. What you may have come to discover, as I have, is that hunting for your perfect fit customer avatar can be a lot like looking for a needle in a haystack. It can get more elusive the longer you search. So maybe instead, we need a match to burn it all down, or a magnet to cut to the chase, or better yet, go to a craft store and find all the needles you'll ever want. I'm all about leverage and making things easy on yourself where it makes sense. In our last episode, I mentioned that sometimes your business has to pivot because you feel called to serve a different audience. And if your current audience is more haystack than needles, I don't want you scrambling to find something that may not even be there. Besides, most of us can't build a business on a single needle in a haystack. This isn't Field of Dreams, which, as I've said many times before, is misquoted all the dang time. The voice from beyond the corn says, if you build it, he will come. Not if you build it, they will come. He. One person. That is not going to work for a target market. You can't build your business on the back of one customer, much to the chagrin of many direct sellers I've worked with over the years. If you want a profitable, sustainable business, that means you have to have a critical mass of customers, enough customers to sustain your business profitably. Most of us can't do that with a single client. I mean, what if something happens to that client? And it does happen. God forbid it should happen to you. That's why we look at a target market, a group of people, an audience, your audience of raving fans. Today, I want you to understand the principles behind finding your target audience, how to determine if you're talking to the right people in the first place, and if not, what may need to shift so that you can actually find these folks. As always, we've got a handy dandy workbook to help you nail this down. You'll find that inside our free Rising Tide Learning Library. Look for Season 6, Episode 11. And if you're not already a member, you'll need to register to access the workbook and all the other free goodies that are waiting for you over at creativefreedomshow.com. Pause this episode now and go get it. I will still be here when you return. Welcome back. Finding your audience is actually more about them finding you, being a lighthouse in many respects for your right people who need a safe harbor from the storms of their world. So what kind of a light are you shining out there? Where does that light come from? How do you even know if you're shining in the right place? There was a time in the big bad world of business where you could pretty much sell anything and people would buy it. You didn't need to persuade people about the benefits of choosing you because you were the only game in town. They either bought what you were selling or they went without, period. These days, buyers are smarter, do more research, and have a lot more options at their fingertips. It takes more than just buy my stuff, it's great, to encourage a buyer to say yes. But even in a world where a whole lot of people might say yes to your offer, you still need to practice a little discernment. Remember Ben & Jerry's and their values? There are lots of ice cream options in the world. So there's a big pool of ice cream options and ice cream eaters. Ben & Jerry's isn't going to be right for all those folks. If their target market was everyone who eats ice cream, they'd be competing with so many brands and ice cream makers, including fast food chains and any mom and pop location offering ice cream to their audience. You need to focus on what my friend and marketing maven Winnie Anderson calls a slice of a slice. In the big audience of ice cream buyers, Ben & Jerry's focuses on a particular subset of folks, a slice of that bigger pie, if you were. Part of that is through the flavors that they choose to offer. Part of that is also the locations in which they've chosen to be available. You can't get it just anywhere, but you can get it in more places than just the local Ben & Jerry's ice cream shop. In fact, there were no Ben & Jerry's locations where I grew up, but I could buy their ice cream in my local store. But logistics and varieties alone still doesn't narrow the slice enough. That's where their values come into play. Everything they do is aligned with the values that they've set and shared with their audience. So, in a location like my local grocery store, not only do their colors and flavors stand out, their values speak volumes and drown out the noise of their competition for their raving fans, making it an easy choice for their customers to say yes to buying their ice cream. You can't control who else is selling something like what you have. You can't control if someone moves in right next door to offer something like what you have. You can control how you show up and how you share your values. And chances are good that the brand X next door is nothing like you are when it comes to your values. Now, our slice of a slice is starting to come together. And I've talked about people types in the past. The right people types help you narrow that slice even further. Not everyone is going to buy your ice cream. And even if they would, it might not be available where they live, or it might cost more than they're willing to pay for it. There are certain commonalities amongst the people types that share your values and want or need what you're offering. And I'm not talking about their hair color, the number of kids they have, or where they went to school, unless those things are pertinent to your audience. If you're offering parenting solutions, your buyers will likely have kids. If you're selling hair color, your audience will care about their hair color, etc. What I mean is, where are these people types congregating? If you have a local offering, are they getting together in person in your area? Or are you willing to travel to a location to be where they are, like at a conference or a convention? In the online world, are they on certain social media platforms? What features of those platforms are they using, or are they congregating in private communities and groups? I want you to find a bunch of needles, not a haystack. Facebook is designed for more personal connections, while LinkedIn is built for more business and professional connections. Twitter has a different vibe altogether, more of an airport terminal where everyone's passing through on their way to somewhere else. Some platforms skew to a younger audience or an older one. Some are designed for people with common values and worldviews. And there are smaller communities for artists, musicians, or any other type of career path. You just need to find them. And here's something to consider as a starting point. Oftentimes, those people types resemble an earlier version of you. Where did you 1.0 hang out? And where are you hanging out now? Will you still be in those spaces in the future? Like, I know for me, I'm looking to pull more and more of my time and resources away from Facebook and into privately held communities. When I was first on the socials a long time ago, I spent more time on Twitter, a lot more than I do now. And then I moved to Facebook and I've slowly migrated to Instagram. And even that is starting to dwindle as my life is getting busier. I'm still not doing much in the way of short form micro content. I'm just not into training goldfish. I want people to think about stuff. And so that's why I create things the way I do and have kind of shied away from micro content. Now, could some of my audience be on those platforms? Sure. I have a client who's very active on TikTok and keeps encouraging me to give it a go, but TikTok isn't my jam, nor are shorts, reels, or other teeny tiny clips of content. Now, I reserve the right to change my mind. I may go there in the future, and as my team evolves, it may be something that they take on when they repurpose my longer form content, but for now, that's not where I'm hanging out. And yeah, I did just mention content repurposing. We talked about that before, right? It's an important part of our marketing strategy, but we're still not trying to be all things to all people in all places on all platforms. You only have so many spoons to go around. So you have to be discerning about where you're investing your resources. Once you determine your platforms, are there searchable terms or hashtags that they're using to find your offers? In an offline setting, is there insider language that you need to know about to connect to that community more authentically? Nashville Podcasters Meetup is one of the largest in the country. And you can know about it and show up, but if you're not familiar with the folks that host it, you can feel a bit like a fish out of water when you attend your first meeting. At least I did. So I'm speaking from experience here. So before I went the second time, I did a little online recon. I looked up the hosts. I learned about the Nashville Entrepreneur Center, which is the venue where the meetups are held. I learned about the NashPod hashtag and the Facebook group and started to recognize there was an entire insider culture that I wasn't aware of before my first visit. And to quote G.I. Joe, knowing is half the battle. But if you're finding these hangouts, for lack of a better term, if you're finding where your audience might be, then the next thing you need to do is double check that their worldview and values align with yours, because there's no point popping into a meetup or an online community filled with people who might buy from you only to discover that their values are in direct opposition to yours. A slice of a slice, remember? That slice is not for you. Which brings me to that last question, making sure that this slice is the right slice for you. You got to do some testing to find that right audience. Now, I don't mean testing their patience with that spray and pray technique, you know, spray them with your offers and pray they'll buy from you. Think about being invited to a party. You wouldn't walk in the door and just start passing out your business cards, would you? Or coupons for 10% off of whatever you're selling? Oh, dear God, I hope not. Step into the conversations already happening in the party. You know, be a fly on the wall for a minute and then start to engage. Talk about what matters to you and also ask other people at the party what matters to them. Don't talk at them, talk to them. The same stuff we talked about in previous episodes. You know, your content marketing does some of that talking, but you also need to engage with people to deepen their interest in what you have to share. In offline situations, you'll want to use that insider language. Get to know who's who in that community. Be friendly with your hosts. In the online world, you'll still need to do that, but hashtags and other search terms make it a little easier to be on the inside track. Then, and this is the tricky part, you've got to be patient. Oh, I know. That's not always easy, right? But you can't send out one tweet and expect to become a viral sensation. Does it happen? Sure. But that's luck. That's not skill. You need to see if and how people respond to you. A lone tweet is like screaming into the void, but consistent content, showing up over time, builds trust and credibility with your audience. Listening to what they're saying and how they're responding will help you know whether or not you're hanging out at the right party in the first place. Remember, it's a conversation, not a monologue. Then, based on the data, the results you're getting from the time you're investing in connecting with these folks, you'll know whether you need to abandon ship, refine your messaging, or just keep on keeping on. One of the things that I started doing when we lived in Mississippi was participating in an online networking group. And I was able to participate in virtual meetings via Zoom with groups all over the world. I'd get up at 6 a.m. to chat with folks in the UK or pop into a group in California at lunchtime. Some of the groups I clicked with, and sometimes it clicked really well with a few members, and we'd schedule a time to connect outside the meeting to learn more about each other. Sometimes those meetings led me to cool people I wanted to keep connecting with, even do business with. And others were great opportunities to learn about other people and practice my networking skills. So while I definitely got my money's worth out of my investment in the online networking group, there were some communities inside that group that I didn't click with and won't continue to show up in, while others have continued to bring me joy, new friends, and yes, new business, although that wasn't the primary reason I joined in the first place. But that bonus made it an easy yes when it came time to renew my membership subscription. And I have a lot more clarity about which slices of a slice inside that group are the right slices of a slice for me to be at for future meetings. Once you've built some equity with folks that matter to you, then you can make the ask. Any ask, really, but for today's purposes, we're talking about asking for the sale. Yes, it's possible to just walk into a room, flash your wares, and have people lining up to buy from you, but we also want to look at the long game here. Building trust and equity with your raving fans is one of the best ways to ensure repeat buyers. So you make the ask, then, and here's that hard part again, you gotta be patient and see what happens. Did people actually buy from you? Did you get any responses at all? If your positioning or messaging is off, you may hear things like, well, I can't afford that, or I'm too busy right now, as your responses are coming in. And maybe you're getting crickets. That's useful information too, to a point, but it doesn't tell you why you are getting crickets. Maybe this isn't an ideal audience, or maybe your messaging is just missing the mark. Are the responses you're getting, including any buyers, looking like the kinds of things that you would expect from your right audience? My right audience doesn't balk at my pricing. They know the value that I bring and see what I offer, and they say, heck yeah, let's do this. Another person I knows that their audience will balk a little at first about their pricing, but they know that once these folks have made the purchase, they're happy campers. Now, if they continue to balk, then she's got clarity enough to know those folks aren't her ideal audience. So look at the data after you make the ask. What were your results, both in terms of engagement and sales? Use the commonalities from the data of your paying customers to create new or additional content that resonated with the folks that actually purchased, then rinse and repeat. So I'm talking a lot of theory here. What does that look like in practice? Well, I was invited to speak at an event where I shared my star power method with the audience. The response from the audience was positive. They were saying, hey, that was great. Thanks for coming and sharing this. One woman said, in all the talks she's seen on topics similar to mine, mine was one of the best put together, most professional presentations she's ever seen. Now, that's high praise indeed, but she didn't buy. Who did buy? Nobody. That is great intel right there. Nobody bought. And I gave that talk again with a few changes to the presentation, and I got less engagement in the room. I didn't get all of that. This was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Wah. But I got more people reaching out afterward to set up times to talk about working together. And some of them hired me. Now, the ones that hired me, that was the commentary that I used to tweak the presentation even further. And then the next time I gave that talk, the entire room was interested in learning more. And about half of them made a purchase of some kind. And I used their data to refine the talk even more. So every time somebody was giving me some information about what they liked, what they didn't like, what they weren't clear on, I was able to massage my presentation to handle that for the next audience. So the next time I do that presentation, so long as it's to my right audience, I expect that I'll have good results. But if I take that same talk to an entirely wrong audience, I should expect some crickets. So yes, finding your target market is a process. Sometimes it's even an evolutionary one. It's not a one and done activity, and it's not always fast. Just like dating, it takes time to get to know your audience, and more important for your audience to get to know you and decide that there's a good fit here. Once you've built that know, like, and trust equity, then they're more likely to buy. Well, sometimes it can be fast, but don't bet on it. Be willing to be patient and do the work. Want some additional help with this? In addition to the handy downloadable for this week's episode, we've also got an entire workshop series inside the Rising Tide Learning Library to help you find your audience. It's called, aptly enough, Find Your Audience. It's a deeper exploration into much of what we've talked about today. And yes, it is free to all our Rising Tide community members. So pop on over and check it out if you're still working to find your audience of raving fans. Thank you for helping us make a bigger impact in the world. We appreciate our sponsors and patrons and every like, share, tweet, follow, and review that you give about creative freedom. We are still one of the fastest growing shows for creative entrepreneurs because of your help. So thank you. And if you're enjoying this show and you've got questions that you want answered, reach out to us and let us know. Next episode, we're going to be exploring how to talk to this target audience that you've been cultivating. I've been saying talk to them, not at them. Well, here's where we get a little more granular on that. Be sure that you're subscribed to the show to get notifications about our upcoming episodes, and I sure hope we will see you there. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you end the hustle and own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.